Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 17, Text 1, Translation and Commentary, by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Arjuna Uvacha, Ye Shastra Vidhim Utsrija Yajante Shadhayan Vitaha, Teshang Nishtha Tukha Krishna, Satvam Aho Rajastamaha. Arjuna inquired, O Krishna, what is the situation of those who do not follow the principles of scripture, but worship according to their own imagination? Are they in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance? Purport. In the fourth chapter, 39th verse, it is said that a person faithful to a particular type of worship gradually becomes elevated to the stage of knowledge and attains the highest perfectional stage of peace and prosperity. In the 16th chapter, it is concluded that one who does not follow the principles laid down in the scriptures is called an asura, demon. And one who follows the scriptural injunctions faithfully is called a deva, a demigod, or demigod. Now, if one with faith follows some rules which are not mentioned in the scriptural injunctions, what is his position? This doubt of Arjuna's is to be cleared by Krishna. Are those who create some sort of God by selecting a human being and placing their faith in him, worshipping in goodness, passion, or ignorance? Do such a persons attain the perfectional stage of life? Is it possible for them to be situated in real knowledge and elevate themselves to the highest perfectional stage? Do those who do not follow the rules and regulations of the scriptures, but who have faith in something and worship gods and demigods and men, attain success in their effort? Arjuna is putting these questions to Krishna. Please turn your cell phone off. Jarasa mobile ban kizye. Apna cell phone bando korun. Or whatever language you happen to understand, turn the damn thing off. This is a very intelligent question of Arjuna. At the end of chapter 16... Krishna has condemned the position, actually throughout most of the chapter 16, but he's condemned the position of the asura. And at the end of the chapter, he describes a prime symptom of the asuras. Yah shastra vidhim utsrija vartate kamakarataha. Nasasidhim avapnoti nasukam naparam gatim. Lord Krishna describes that those who do not follow scriptural injunctions, they neglect or abandon or consider themselves above scriptural injunctions, and who act according to their own desire, they do not attain happiness, nor perfection, nor the supreme destination. Now, elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna has several times mentioned the yajna, yajante, madhyajino, yanti deva vrata devan, Pitrin yanti pitri vrataha, bhutani yanti bhujeja, madhyaji pi... What is it? Alright, I forgot the last line. So anyway, this term, yajan, worship, this comes several times. Yes, in this verse, Lord Krishna says, those who worship devas, demigods, they go to the demigods. Those who worship the Pitris, the deceased forefathers, they go to them. Those who worship ghosts, they attain the same nature as ghosts. And Madhyajino Piyanti Mam, those who worship me, they come to me. So this is just one example. This word is used. There are several key themes in Bhagavad Gita, so this is one of them. So Arjuna is putting these two points together, that we often see people, even at that time Arjuna was saying, that we see people who are very... Another word which is used a lot in Bhagavad Gita is Shraddha, which is translated as faith. Now we see, Arjuna says that we see some people are worshipping with great faith. And nishtha, this is a similar word to shraddha, nishtha. Tisham nishtha tuka krishna. Sattvam aho rajastamaha. Is there nishtha? Is there faith and their determination? Is it sattvic, rajasic or tamasic? Now these are also terms which Krishna has used a lot. So Arjuna wants to see how does it all fit together. What about people who are worshipping with a lot of faith, but they're not following the scriptural rules? What about them? You see, they're doing everything very nicely, but it's not exactly according to scripture. What is their position? A prominent example in the present day, what Krishna and Arjuna are discussing, it's not relevant only to the battlefield of Kurukshetra, but it's relevant in the present day. We'll see how relevant this is when I bring up this example. Maybe you may not know so much because you don't live in India, but I do. How popular, I mean it was already very popular, but recently it's become very much more popular, is worship of Shirdi Sai Baba. Now this is a very good example of people who worship. It's just one example. Of course, there are so many babas, bappas, and all kinds of things. Actually, this Shirdi Sai Baba is a little different from the other, the wheelchair. Now he's the wheelchair Sai Baba. He used to be known as the fancy hairstyle Sai Baba, but I think he lost all his hair. And now he's in a wheelchair. So there's babas and bappas and ammas and shri shris and all kind of things going on in the description of not following Shastra, not according to Shastra. According to Shastra, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, aham hi sarva yagyanam bhukta cha prabhureva cha. Krishna is to be worshipped. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But there are many cults like this, but the Shirdi Sai Baba is a little different because he's already dead a long time ago. Who knows where he is now? You know, which body he's in? Which planet he's on? But most, he's different from the modern self-made gods in that he's not around to promote himself. It's a personality cult, but not based upon a living person. He was some fakir or something like this. And there may have been so many people like this in Indian history. Practically wherever you go, in every village, there's been some kind of saint at some point in time. But somehow or other, the legend lives on. And he would probably be surprised to know, if you could go back in a time machine to whenever he was living. When was it? Late 19th century, something like that?
1930s.
Oh, is it? Not even less than 100 years ago. If you could go back in time, he'd probably be very surprised to know that there's temples of him all over the place and people worshipping him as God and this and that. So, it seems that his popularity it was already big, but it's come up a lot. I was told, because I asked people, how is it? You see, in Maharashtra, okay, it was going on, but recently in Gujarat also, in other parts, I mean, it's become, You know, there's Sai temples all over the place. Sai this, Sai that. So I was told there was a TV serial about him. And this promoted his popularity. People are so shallow. They're practically they're dictated to by the TV. I'll give another example. Now the World Cup soccer is coming up in South Africa. Everyone knows that, right? You all know that. I also know. How do I know? What's that got to do with me? But you can't. And it's omnipresent. Unless you go and lock yourself up in a cave somewhere, probably someone will come in and say, "Do you want a special discount for TV for this World Cup soccer?" Of course, Indian people don't care about it so much. Anyway, I'm just giving this example because even in India, there's even in Surat, I saw in Gujarati written some sign, "Win tickets to the South Africa World Cup." You know, what is Gujarati people interested in? Anyway, someone's interested. But I just remember that way back in, it must have been maybe late 1970s or early 1980s, I was in ISKCON, Calcutta, and I saw the newspaper and there was like a 3-line saying something like, "Argentina had won the World Cup soccer." And I was surprised because in England, where this miserable body was born in that miserable country, World Cup final soccer is just like, it's the biggest, much more big event than the general election, who becomes the prime minister. It's the biggest thing that goes on every 4 years, for most of the world probably. So I'm just saying how nowadays in India there's all soccer, this sport, that sport, tennis, I don't think anyone ever heard of tennis in India, and then this Sonia came, what's her name? Sonia Mirza or something came up. Yeah, Mirza, is it? Depends on it. So it just shows how the TV, they can promote anything practically. People are just addicted to the TV and then they take an interest in it. So no one really stops to think why. You know, why should we be interested in some young Muslim girl who, if she did it, if they did that 2 or 3 generations ago, they'd probably kill her for jumping around in public. I haven't seen, but I know from the past that, the tennis-playing girls, they don't dress in a very chaste manner. So no one, I don't think, probably most people 20, 30 years ago never even heard of tennis in India. Now, it's a big thing. We have some tennis player. And cricket, yeah, people liked it, but now it's ekdam pagalpan. It's just crazy, isn't it, really? They stay up all night watching cricket and playing cricket in like 40 degrees heat. This is madness. But they made such a big thing out of it that everyone's interested. So in the same way, actually, if we're going to worship someone and pray to someone, doesn't it make sense that we should first of all think about it? Who is this person? What is the qualification to worship? But came on TV. Must be author. That's why I was also doing TV lectures, because at least put something real out there, something of value. People often say, "Aapko dekha TV par," and I say, "To yaad hai jo maine bataya? Nahi, lekin aapko dekha." They're supposed to listen to what you say, but it's just, TV is for fools, really. It's better to hear Shastra. It's better. Even if you have little Krishna or whatever it is on TV, it might be somewhat, slightly Krishna conscious, but really we have our process, Shravanam, Kirtanam, not TV Darshanam. It didn't become Dashavidha Bhakti, thanks to the modern age. It's still Navavidha Bhakti. So, on which the first is Shravanam. But that also became very cheap. Anyway, back to Sai Baba, because we're supposed to be talking about Krishna. You all came here to hear about Krishna. But I'm speaking from Bhagavad Gita, in which Arjuna's question leads us into the murky land of all kinds of bogus religions, because it is a topic which most people in the world who think they're very religious, including Hindus, are falling in the category which Arjuna is speaking about, especially in the modern age. No one stops to think, is it according to Shastra? They should think, why should we worship this person? But they don't. It's just, other people are doing it, and so we also, I don't know exactly what the mentality, but whatever it is, it's pretty stupid to just start worshipping and praying and offering money. And if you ask people why, it's why, that's the last thing they would think about. But it should be the first thing they think about. Actually, not even the last thing they think about. People don't think at all. It's like something which is, maybe the word think will cease to be in any dictionary due to lack of usage. It's, people just don't think. It's just,
show it on TV.
And it's just stupid. So, people are doing the right thing in many ways, but in the wrong way, or with the wrong focus. I became exposed to this recently. I was 7 weeks staying in ISKCON Surat, thanks to some... I had to stay there for some time. So right next door is a temple, a very beautiful temple, and one of the several gods worshipped there, right next door to our ISKCON temple, and actually right next door to the room where I was staying. One of the several gods being worshipped there, of course there's only one god, but in their estimation, is Sai Baba. You're trying to tell me I should speak about Krishna indirectly. Well, we'll come to Krishna, but we want to come to Krishna in a very solid way. So we can speak about leelas and this and that, but our understanding may not be very solid. So we have to understand exactly why we are worshipping Krishna. Then our nishtha in this verse, which read today, this our nishtha will be very strong. So yeah, I was staying next to the temple, and they'd have everyday arati, and we'd hear them chanting various mantras or imitation mantras, Sai Namaste, and some other songs and this and that. So it's almost right. I mean, there's arati, puja, ringing of bells, offering flowers, bowing down, chanting mantras, early in the morning. Everything's right, except everything's wrong, because they're not worshipping Krishna. Even if they're worshipping a demigod, that we find in, I think, verse 4 of chapter 17, Yajante Sattvika Devan, that's considered sattvic to worship demigods. But this is to worship a human being. Yaksha Rakshansi, what's that, verse 4? To people who worship yakshas, rakshasas, human beings. I can look it up myself. I believe it's verse number 4 of chapter 17.
Yajanti sarvikan devan yaksha rakshansi rajasaha pretan bhuta ganans chanye yajanti tamasajana.
People in goodness worship the demigods. Those in passion worship the demons. And those in the mode of goodness worship ghosts and spirits. So Sai Baba is not a demigod. Maybe a demon or a ghost or spirit or whatever. So it all looks very nice, but the result is not the same. The result of worshipping Sai Baba is not the same as worshipping Krishna. Even the result of worshipping Vedic recognized demigods like Shiva and Durga, it's not the same as that of worshipping Krishna. There's a different result. But people are doing it, it's Arjuna's point. That people worship with a lot of faith and a lot of feeling. And isn't that bhakti? It seems to be the same thing, right? People calling out, Sai Namaste. And there's a lot of feeling in there, a lot of faith. And isn't that the same as devotees worshipping Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna? Seems to be the same thing. But there is a difference. And that's why we have to study Bhagavad Gita as it is. To understand the Shastric basis. You can come inside up under Rajai. Jaga hai under. Please come inside. We have to understand what the difference is. That Krishna actually is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are all His eternal servants. And our relationship with Him as servant to master, that is Sanatan Dharma. That is our eternal position. Whereas worshipping demigods, well, in the case of worshipping most demigods, that's only a temporary position. It's just like we give a lot of respect to prime minister, chief minister of a state. But we know that ultimately they're just ordinary people like us. I mean, Manmohan Singh is... I don't think he ever expected to be Prime Minister. He was a professor, and somehow he became Prime Minister. So we know that he could... Someone from a similar background to us, and somehow they got that position. So it could have been us. So like that, with the demigods also, they're very pious people who got a very high position. But in the next birth, we could be in the same position, or we might be higher than them. So we worship them because of their position. But it's different with Krishna, because his position, it's not that Krishna is ever going to become, because of his karma, on the same level as us. He's in a category, he's in a different category altogether. He is always in the position of the Supreme, and we are always in the position of His servant. Shiva is again in a different category, but it's not that any one of us, by doing pious activities, we're ever going to become Shiva, or that Shiva is ever going to fall down to our position, but he again is also a servant of Krishna. So the fault with worshipping demigods, and what to speak of Sai Baba, I'm just using as an example. There are so many, like I say, you know, this Baba, that Baba, some Bapa, and so many. The fault is that it's the right attitude, or at least the trapping, or it seems to be the right attitude, but it's wrongly directed. It's just like you see the Prime Minister may come, and there'll be bodyguards and this and that. And if you should know what the Prime Minister looks like, but if you don't know, you know, you bring the garland and then you put it on the bodyguard. And you say, oh, it's the wrong person, you know, and no one will be pleased. The bodyguard will be embarrassed, and you look stupid. You are stupid, and then the Prime Minister will be, you know, who is this? I mean, they don't even know who I am. It's supposed to be welcoming me, and it's embarrassing for everyone. So in the same way, the demigods are servants of Krishna, and if we worship them, and you know, it's supposed to be for Krishna. If they also want to worship Krishna, and then there are others who may imitate some. We have a reception party waiting for the prime minister, and someone who's a rascal dresses up and looks like the prime minister and pretends to be the prime minister, and people, and then they, you know, have a big reception for him and this and that. But then when the real prime minister comes, that guy will get arrested and thrown in prison. So it's like that. We have imitation gods who pretend to be God, and people who are stupid, who don't really know, they worship them, but then Krishna smacks them with his maya. They get thrown into hell for their cheap imitation jobs. So it should be understood clearly, especially when we're living in a world of cheetahs, who actually is the right God. Now I'm saying Shirdi Sai Baba is a little different from all these modern cheetahs who are promoting themselves as God. Of course, they say about this wheelchair Bhagawan that he doesn't say he's God, but he allows his followers to call him God. So it's, you know, it's a cheating process to say that he doesn't call himself God, because he allows it. It's the same thing. So, isn't it all the same? I mean, most people would think, well, it's all the same. You see, you can worship Krishna, or you can worship Sai Baba, or you can worship this or that or anything. This is coming from the Mayavad, or the impersonalistic idea, that all gods are the same. Actually, there is no supreme. This is the impersonalistic idea. You can. The main thing is to concentrate your mind, and you can worship any form you like, it doesn't matter. And whatever form you worship, it's okay, because when you become perfectly concentrated in worship, then you yourself become God. This is the Mayavad idea. The people are worshipping Sai Baba. They don't know all this philosophy. They don't know any philosophy. Otherwise, they would have never gone there in the first place. But it's because these ideas have been propagated within, for want of a better word, Hindu society. Therefore, it has come down to this level where practically anyone can do anything and claim themselves to be spiritual. And people will go along with it because they don't know what the actual standard is. The standard is given in Shastra. Who is God? What are the proper principles of worship? Everything is given in Shastra. But because of the modern impersonalist wrong preaching, people think, well, anything, whatever you do, it's all the same, it's all okay. Joto mot toto pot was a slogan promoted by someone who people called a Paramahamsa. They use this word Paramahamsa very cheaply. So, jato mat tato pat means there's many opinions, that many paths. But then why what it comes down to, people think that, well, everything's okay, everything's nice, everything's good. If you say everything's nice, everything's good, sounds nice, doesn't it? You see, we don't disrespect anyone, everything's good. But that's not the fact. There is what is proper, there is what is improper. That's why there is Shastra. But if you say everything is good, you see, people are worshipping with a lot of faith. Why should you criticize that? Why should you disturb their faith when they're doing nice puja, they're rising early in the morning, they take bath, they do puja, they chant mantras. Why disturb that? It's very good. But it's not according to Shastra. And if we start acting outside the domain of Shastra, then all kinds of speculations and wrong ideas can come and have come. So it is very wrong to worship Sai Baba, because it spoils the, well, there are many reasons, but the main reason is that it spoils the opportunity of human life to worship Krishna, who is the actual Supreme Personality of Godhead, who should be worshipped, and by worshipping whom in pure devotion, we come to the perfection of life. That is in itself the perfection of life. Whereas, or even if one does not worship Krishna in pure devotion, but if he very seriously worships, even with the wrong spirit, then, especially if one gets the association of a pure devotee, then even if one has many desires, by worshipping of Krishna, because it's the right person worshipped, then we become purified. Akama sarva kamova moksha kama udaradhihi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushamparam. Whether one is desireless, full of desires, or desires moksha, liberation, if one worships intensely, or one should worship intensely the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The example is Dhruva Maharaj, who was full of material desire, but he worshipped intensely Krishna under the guidance of a pure devotee, and he became a pure devotee of Krishna. Now, sometimes this verse is quoted, and people say, yeah, you can have all kinds of desires, you can still worship Krishna, it's okay. But the word tivrena, one should worship intensely, that's the point. The intenseness is purifying. If one simply cultivates material desires, that's you can't properly worship Krishna anyway. So, worshipping Krishna even with material desires, that can be purifying. What to speak of worshipping Krishna without material desires, but worshipping Sai Baba, you can go on doing it for many, many lifetimes. It will never purify one, because Sai Baba himself, he's not the proper object of worship. He's not a pure soul, because if he was a pure soul, he would have recommended the worship of Krishna, which he didn't do. And therefore, by worshipping him, not only is it not purifying, but it's actually contaminating. Even though it seems to be very good and very pious, it's actually an offense to Krishna. And it's a misuse of our human life. So by this Mayavad, or the idea, everything's all one, whatever you do, it's all okay, worship any god, it's all the same, it's confusing propaganda, which makes everything seem nice. And it may seem that the Vaishnavas, well, they're not very nice. You see, we say you worship any god, we worship Sai Baba, we don't mind if you worship Krishna. So why, if you're worshipping Krishna, are you criticizing us? We're not criticizing you. Why do you criticize us? But we should, because we should see there is a difference. This is what we are doing is right, because it's according to Shastra. And what you're doing is wrong, even though it resembles in so many ways the right things, but it's wrong because it's based on the wrong person. So it's not just a matter of feeling. You see, I feel for my... One devotee was telling me, he was explaining these points in one lecture in South Gujarat, and some woman who was attached to this wheelchair Bhagavan, he was obliquely making some comments about this, the god whose hair fell out. And she stopped and said, oh, why are you criticizing my god? And he said, well, it's not according to Shastra. There's no description. I don't care if it's anything in Shastra. It's my Bhagavan. It's just completely nonsense. My Bhagavan. It's not my Bhagavan. What do you mean? We belong to Bhagavan. There's one Bhagavan for everyone. You can't have your own individual Bhagavan. And because I am attached to him, you shouldn't criticize. No, we should speak the truth. The truth is that these Babas and all these, they're not Bhagavan. It's just a complete imagination. We should know what is the meaning of Bhagavan. Therefore, we should study Shastra to understand what is the actual truth. And if you don't like it, that just proves that you're a rascal. If you don't like to hear this, then your rascaldom is proved. You say, "Well, I'm doing worship." Yeah, but that worship, if you worship the wrong person, you see, even Ravana was worshipping Lord Shiva. Hiranyakashipu was worshipping Lord Brahma. So, they're worshipping, but their intention is wrong. We say, "Well, I'm not wrong." I go to the Sai temple, and we're good people. We look after our families, and we feed them nicely, eggs and chicken, we give money for charities and this and that. Or they may be vegetarians. You see, we're good people, but no. Even your so-called good activities, it's like offering in the yajna. You see, you're offering nice, very good ghee. Well, you have to offer ghee into what? Into fire. But if the fire already went out and there's only ashes, then however nice the ghee is, it's all useless. So if there's not actual Bhagavan there, then you can do yajna, puja, mantra, dhyanam, everything. But it's all useless. It won't have any effect. They have Sai Katha now in imitation of Krishna Katha and Ram Katha. I don't know what they speak about. I don't want to know either, but it's all just imitation. Even though people have such feeling, and you may think, well, we shouldn't hurt people's feelings. Actually, we should hurt their feeling, because their feeling is dragging them to hell. They're just on the platform of feeling. But Krishna rejected that. Arjuna was saying, "I don't feel like fighting. It seems very bad to me." And Krishna told him, "You're nonsense. Anarya jushtama swargam akirti karam Arjuna. Why are you talking this nonsense which won't help you at all? It's not befitting you at all." Arjuna, he didn't say to Krishna, tell me tattvagyan. Arjuna just said, "Look, I'm confused. You tell me, should I fight or not fight?" And Krishna said, he told in the Bhagavad Gita, he said, "First you understand, then you decide." Krishna refused to just tell Arjuna. Arjuna wanted to stop thinking. "I feel I don't want to fight, but I'm not sure, you tell me." And Krishna said, "I'm not going to tell you. You decide, but first you understand." Krishna wanted Arjuna to intelligently understand and make his own decision. So this whole idea, feeling, feeling is good in bhakti, but that has to be on the basis of understanding. Otherwise, in bhakti also, in the name of feeling, there's so much misunderstanding. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was present in Vrindavan, every night people were going to see, they had a vision of Krishna dancing on the river Yamuna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's servant, he said, "I want to go at night and see Krishna. You see, Krishna has appeared again in Vrindavan." And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Well, what? You're supposed to be a big pundit. You're just such a fool. You don't consider." Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is Krishna. But later the news came that what people saw, a vision of Krishna dancing in the Yamuna, he was actually a fisherman going out in the boat, and he had some lamp, and so that little deepam, and in the night people misunderstood, and they took it that Krishna is dancing on Kaliya. So it seemed like bhakti, you see, bhakti for Krishna. So many times people say, "Oh, I had a vision of Krishna." Someone told Prabhupada, he mentioned this, that some lady, or she was in Jagannath temple, and Jagannath grabbed her sari, and Prabhupada said, "Jagannath grabbed her sari? That ugly woman, why would Jagannath be attracted?" I mean, even materially she's ugly, then Krishna's not attracted to your ugly bodies. That's quite common, and there's still one bogus sampradaya in Bengal, and in Puri you'll see them. They're men, but they dress as women, thinking, "We are gopis, and Krishna will love us, seeing us in our saris." But Krishna, he's not so foolish. Now that brings me back to Surat, because there's one of these Prakriti Sahajiya so-called gurus who people call an incarnation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he's an old ugly man, not as ugly as Sai Baba, but getting that way. So he sometimes dresses in, he has long hair like this, speaks on Srimad Bhagavatam. He's actually quite learned in Shastra, but he's a rascal. And he sometimes dresses in a sari, and you see, even some of our supposed to be ISKCON devotees, they think, oh, you see, he's a great devotee. Because they're fools. They're lucky that they have, you see, our temple is next to this Sai, actually some other temple, Ramdev temple, but they have Sai Baba there also. So our devotees who came in the ISKCON temple, they're lucky. Maybe due to some previous Sukriti, they became attracted to Krishna. But actually their mentality, if they're still attracted to these bogus Sahajiyas, their mentality is not intrinsically much more elevated than those who go to the Sai Baba temple. It's just their feeling. They don't understand shastrically why we should be worshipping Krishna. And therefore, not only this, but you see all these popular speakers come who, on Krishna, they speak on Srimad Bhagavatam and they cry and they play, sing a few songs, and people think it's really nice. But they don't speak on Bhagavatam the way Prabhupada spoke on Bhagavatam. They call me to one of these Bhagavad Saptahas, and I spoke there, and I told them, now I'm going to tell you a whole bunch of shlokas, which if you go to these Bhagavad Saptahas, you can go all your life, you'll never hear. These Bhagavad speakers, they never even know, if they ever saw these shlokas, they wish they didn't exist. They're offenders to Bhagavatam because they never speak. There are so many shlokas which people don't want to discuss, which Prabhupada discussed. Yesterday I was saying, you see, all the devotees that learned so many verses, they didn't know this one verse, which Prabhupada quoted so many times. Matiya na krishne paratasvatova mitopi padyeta grihavratanam adanta gobhya vishatang tamisram punaf punas charvita charvananam. People, even our own devotees, I don't know why, but Prabhupada quoted this shloka so many times. Our own devotees don't learn it. It means that persons who are addicted to sense gratification, they enter into the darkest regions chewing that which has already been chewed. Their inclination to Krishna is never awakened, even by their own so-called search for truth, by their getting together in conferences, by the endeavors of others. They're determined to remain in the material world and not surrender to Krishna. People don't. Pungsastriya mituni bhavametam. Can anyone finish this verse? Anyone? Prabhupada quoted it so many times. Nowadays it's banned. It's tayoraho hridya grantimahu. Ato griha kshetra sutapta vitayar janasya moho yamahammameti. Ahammameti. I, me, and mine. This is what ties us up in material existence. What is that? The basic principle of material existence is attraction between male and female, which causes a tight knot of material attraction on the heart. And therefore we become attached to home, country, family, children, money, and we become more and more bewildered, thinking in terms of I, me, and mine. Prabhupada quoted it many times, but nowadays, we don't want to hear it. If I quote these verses, which I do, people won't like to hear it. If I come and I tell many leelas of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he was crying and falling on the ground, so many people will come to hear me. If I speak as Prabhupada spoke, they won't like to come. They like to wash my feet. They don't like to hear this. But because we don't like to hear, then we're in danger of being victimized. If we don't hear Shastra as it is, then we're in danger of being victimized simply by our sentiments. And then we will misunderstand. We'll if we go by our feelings, if we don't like to hear the message of Krishna consciousness as Prabhupada presented it, Bhagavad Gita, the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada spoke for days in Bombay on this Kapila Dev's teachings about the Sankhya Yoga, and it's very technical subjects. Prabhupada spoke for days, days and days. Every day in the class, Prabhupada spoke on that. So if we just like to hear what we like, makes what we feel is nice, then already we're in a cheating process. We're cheating ourselves, because instead of hearing what the acharyas have given to teach us, what Vyasadeva has given us, we're already selecting. This is nice, that's not nice. We better not put that in the Bhakti Shastri course. Or this sannyasi is nice because he speaks like, makes me feel good. That becomes our criterion. Instead of, the real criterion should be that we should be seriously trying to understand what is the truth and surrendering to Krishna. And surrender means that we have to not only hear the nice things, but hear about all the nasty things which are in our heart, which have to be removed. You see, if we only hear the nice things, it's already presuming that we're already on that big high platform, that we don't have any attachment to home, children, wife, country. But is it a fact? We're actually so elevated? I doubt it. And actually, if we were so elevated, then Prabhupada, who's more elevated than Prabhupada? He spoke on all these things for the benefit of others. So it's our good fortune if we come into Krishna consciousness. But that good fortune can again turn to bad fortune if we don't teach and understand Krishna consciousness as it is given in Shastra, as it is given by our acharyas. If we just want to hear the nice things, there's no doubt Krishna consciousness is very nice. I'm not saying it's a nasty process where you have to grit your teeth and be nasty, but it is a fact that in our hearts there are many dirty things, there are many misunderstandings, and the Shastra addresses these very clearly. In Bhagavad Gita, we don't only find the manmana bhava madbhakta, we also find namang duskrishno mudha prapadyante naradhama. We find these verses. They're describing the demoniac people. In Bhagavatam, there are dozens of verses which describe the... not only dozens of verses, there are whole sections. We find Jarabharat speaking on the materially contaminated mind. We find Jarabharat talking about the entanglement of material existence. Kapila Dev also speaks about that. So, if we don't like to hear this, then by sentiment, we could also be misled by someone who comes and speaks very sentimentally. And our children, they could also, they're more likely to be misled, or any other generations, and we can't teach people very clearly unless we teach the whole of Shastra as it is. They won't get the message. Then they'll get the idea will be there that God, the general idea which is there in the world, in everyone, is that God is there to bless our material life. And therefore we find devotees who should know better, when things go wrong in their material life, which does for everyone, then they start to think, oh no, why is Krishna being so... I did everything nicely to serve Krishna, and Krishna's giving me... And then there's bad things, and their faith in Krishna becomes diminished. And they think, oh, I can't follow this anymore. I don't believe all that. Okay, I'll just chant Hare Krishna. Don't talk any philosophy to me. I've heard this. You see, I just was serving Krishna, and I didn't look after my business very well, and you know, Krishna should have looked after it. My business collapsed, now I'm in debt. But that's his misunderstanding. That if you have a business, you should look after it and give the. It's not that Krishna has to look after it. Or if you're so much absorbed in Krishna and you expect your business to collapse, then don't complain. Krishna is not obliged to come in and wipe your backside after you pass stool. I'm just too much doing bhakti. I don't have time to wipe my backside. So Krishna should do it. Is this the attitude? It's just we should understand clearly the philosophy. Arjuna, I'm your devotee, Krishna. This is horrible. Why don't you just, you tell me what to do. Actually, Arjuna wanted Krishna to tell him, yeah, I understand. He wanted Krishna to be an empathetic listener, to use that popular term. And yes, I understand. Yeah, all right, okay, Arjuna, yeah. Okay, you go off. You don't fight, yeah. Yeah, you're a good guy. He was expecting Krishna will tell him. He didn't want to take the blame himself. He thought, if I just leave the fight, then people will blame me. So, I'll get Krishna to support me. You see, I'm giving all these reasons, Krishna. And now, what do you think? And he is expecting Krishna will say, yeah, actually, you're right. Yeah, okay. And then you see, and Arjuna will say, Yudhishthira is saying, well, what happened, Arjuna? Where are you going? He said, well, Krishna told me, you see. Krishna said I shouldn't fight, so I'm following him. He wanted to use Krishna as an excuse, but Krishna told him, you're a damn fool rascal. I heard Prabhupada say that. About Krishna said to Arjuna, you're a damn fool. So Arjuna had the cheating mentality of wanting to use Krishna to support his nonsense, that without trying to deeply understand the situation, just based on his feeling of what was right, he wanted to do something, what seemed right to him. But he presented all these things. Look, Krishna, the women won't be protected, and this and that, and we have to fight our gurus. And he presented his whole program to Krishna, and he just wanted Krishna to rubber stamp it. Yes, you are right. Arjuna, oh, you're such a brilliant philosophy. You're giving... Wow, I never thought of that. Oh, actually, yeah. Phew. Yeah, okay, all right. Let Duryodhana rule and you can go off and be a yogi. But Krishna himself, he should have submitted to Krishna. What should I do? That should have been what he said, first of all. Not try to preach to Krishna. But he wanted to use Krishna. But Krishna didn't accept that. And then Arjuna surrendered. But and Arjuna was in so many ways. Krishna told him, and again Arjuna was protesting and giving different. Well, first of all, you tell me to fight, then you tell me not to fight. Can you tell me clearly? And he's just waffling and trying to get out of it. But Krishna gives him the philosophy very clear. You understand this, then you decide what to do. And Arjuna accepted it. But if we don't want to accept, oh, I just feel for Krishna. Well, that's what Arjuna was saying. Krishna, I love you so much, but nayodsya iti Govindam. Govinda, I'm not going to fight, he told him. I love you, Govinda, but he already made his mind up. I'm not going to fight, he told him blankly. I don't want to fight. Why should I fight? But Krishna didn't accept this, and therefore he spoke Bhagavad Gita. And if we want to follow in the footsteps of Arjuna, then we should follow Bhagavad Gita. Of course, we hear some rascals who say that, oh, Arjuna, he's on a very low platform. We're gopis. Bhagavad Gita, this is very low class. People who say like this are total rascals. They pretend to be devotees, but they think they're on a higher platform than Arjuna. The teachings of Bhagavad Gita, that's also applicable in all levels. Even if you're a gopi, of course, in one sense, they're above it. They're above it in the sense that a mathematician is above arithmetic. Not, it means he doesn't have to study it. It's just so automatic for him, but the principles still apply. Principles of Bhagavad Gita apply in Raja Bhakti also. It's just that they don't have to think about it because it's so natural for them. But Krishna is the center. Krishna is to be worshipped. Krishna is to be surrendered to. That's there in Raja Bhakti also. So we should hear these things. We shouldn't think, well, you know, I'll just hear some stories and it'll feel nice and we'll have a few jokes and then that's it. But Krishna himself points out very clearly what is right and what is wrong. Prabhupada himself as Nirvishesha, Shunyavadi, Paschatya Desha Tari was delivering the Western countries and actually all the countries from impersonalism and voidism. And we should understand, just you see, this Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is asking this question. It's as relevant today as it ever was. It's the same thing going on. People are worshipping with faith, but it's something completely bogus. So it's not the same as worshipping Krishna. And we should understand why it's not. Because it appears to be the same thing. It appears to be Sai worship and Krishna worship. It appears, and it may appear that the Sai worshippers have more feeling, more bhakti. But even if superficially they have more feeling, it's all bogus. It cannot be considered to be on the spiritual platform. It's in the lower modes of material nature. To first of all, not even to inquire about the absolute truth. That's the beginning of spiritual life. One cannot even begin to inquire atato brahma jignyasa until one comes to the what is the nature of reality, unless one comes to sattva gun. Unfortunately, you see, even in Krishna consciousness, many people, they just come out of some kind of feeling. That's why I always say that you read the Prabhupada's books. Don't just come out of feeling. That, then you could be misled very easily. Try to understand what Prabhupada is teaching. He is a teacher. What does it mean, guru? It doesn't mean, of course, I'm not complaining that you wash my feet, but I'm saying that twice now. When I came here, the devotees very kindly washed my feet. But that's not the beginning and the end. That's the beginning. That's nice etiquette. But the real thing is to hear and understand. Having a guru is not just a matter, you know, you have a picture, you offer some incense, say Jai Guru Dev when he comes, wash his feet, give him some dakshina. But the central point is to hear. And on the basis of that, become convinced and act in such a way that we'll become purified. Therefore, I'm always stressing, at least read Prabhupada's books, which he has given. Otherwise, our bhakti for Krishna, in many ways, it may be just the same as the bhakti for Sai Baba. It's just feeling. We don't know why. We don't care why. But we just do it. And that's it will never be on a strong basis. And that can be misled at any time. Or it can change to Sai Baba worship. Or someone can come along dressed up as a gopi and we think, oh, a great devotee. Because we don't understand. So we should make the effort to understand what's in these books. And not just learn the verses. Again, this is very good. But you have to read the purports too and understand what's in there. It's not a shloka competition. Actually, I don't like these shloka competitions. I never heard of, you know, Krishna telling Arjuna, okay, and I'm speaking some shlokas, you can remember them, and then if you survive the fight, you can get first prize in the Bhagavad Gita shloka competition. I know it's not a matter of, it's not a competition. We're not competing, we're trying to understand. It's in the modern age, there's a competition for a drawing competition, this competition, that. But Bhagavad Gita is not a matter of competition. It's for purification. It's the idea, I'll be number one. There's something wrong there. Anyway, that's another subject. There are so many misconceptions. So many wrong ideas. We bring all our wrong ideas into bhakti and mix it all up. But that's not the process. We should hear, understand, and follow. Otherwise we'll be misled. Let's say you see this ecstatic Sai dancing, Sai chanting, but that's not ecstasy. It may seem like it's ecstasy, but it's on a different platform to those who are actually in ecstasy. And it may seem that some devotees are in ecstasy chanting, but that may also not be fully. Some people may be chanting Hare Krishna. It may seem like ecstasy, but we have to see after the chanting stops how they behave, how they speak. It may be just some transformation of their musical sense, or because we see the Sai chanters, they also seem to be in some kind of ecstasy, but they cannot be ecstasy because, you know, Sai Baba was just some kind of yogi or something like that, and you know, his conditioned soul within the material world, he's not the object of worship. So Hare Krishna. Any questions about this, please? Yes, please.
Maharaj, couple of things. I've actually seen the Bhagavad Gita that Sai Baba's followers use. And
which one?
There's actually
which Sai Baba?
The one in the wheelchair.
The wheelchair Baba. They have a.
They have a Bhagavad Gita, and I mean, it's not true that he doesn't say he's not Bhagavan, because that Bhagavad Gita.
Well, that's generally what his followers say when you accuse them.
Everywhere we went to.
Yeah.
Everywhere where Krishna says, wherever there's Krishna mentioned or Krishna says me, it's Sai.
No, but he says his followers put that, but he allows it, right?
But it's in print and it's circulation.
Yeah. It's just hypocrisy of him to say that I don't call myself. Yeah.
But the Sirdi Sai Baba.
Yeah.
Apparently, was a devotee of Krishna.
Really?
What history supposedly says.
In what way did he ask people to chant Hare Krishna? Did he teach them to surrender to Krishna? Did he teach them to follow the principles of Krishna consciousness? There's a difference.
I understand that, but what I'm getting at is, if he was worshipping Krishna, and...
If he was?
He may not be... at least that's what they say. But if he was, but these people are not worshipping him as a devotee of Krishna.
It's the first time I heard he was a devotee of Krishna. But even if he is, the way they're worshipping him doesn't... They don't have any contact with Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, so what happens in that?
What happens? Well, that's the same question that Arjuna asked. Right? So, Krishna says that those who worship the devas, they're in sattvakun. Those who worship the... Yakshas and Rakshasas, they're in Rajagun. Those who worship the Bhuta and Preta, they're in Tamagun. So, they definitely are not in Sattvagun. And then, the result of being in Rajagun is Madhyetishtanti Rajasa, Jaganyaguna Vritisto, Adhoga Chanti Tamasa. One in Rajagun stays in the earthly sphere, one who's in Tamagun goes down. So, it's not elevating.
So, it's only if worshipping a devotee of Krishna, only if you know him as, only if you're worshipping him as a devotee of Krishna.
The result of worship that is purifying is that one surrenders to Krishna. But there's no sign of that in these Sai Baba or anything. So it's all useless, worse than useless.
Maharaj, do you recall the reference to those two shlokas, the Srimad Bhagavatam shlokas that you were quoting?
Matirna Krishne? That's in Prahlad Maharaj's teachings. Prahlad Maharaj speaks that in the 7th canto. And Nunang Pramata, no, that wasn't the one, that's another good one. Pungsastriya Mitani Bhavametam, that's in Rishabdev's teachings, 5th canto, 5th chapter of Bhagavatam. There are some great shlokas in there. That Nayam Deho Deha Bhajan Riloke Kashtan Kaman Arhate Virdhujam Ye Tapo Divyam Putraka Yena Satvam Yasma Shudyad Yasmad Brahma Sokyam Twanantam. That's the first verse of Rishabdev's teachings to his sons. in which he says that one who has attained the human form of life should not act for sense gratification as do the hogs and dogs who eat stool, but rather they should engage in divine austerity for the sake of attaining eternal spiritual happiness. Then again in Rishabhdev's teachings, we get, these are all verses which are not very popular in ISKCON these days, but Prabhupada spoke them regularly. That's why we learn them, because we know Prabhupada gave importance to them. Nunam pramata kurute vikarma yat indriya pritiya aprinoti na sadhu manye yata atmano yama sanna piklesha da asadeha. Another favorite of Prabhupada's, in which Rishabhdev says that certainly persons are insane who perform sinful activities which cause them to get body after body and suffer again and again. That's the short version. You can look up the whole translation. So there are many verses. Shukadeva Goswami, when he first came, when he first spoke to Parikshit, what did he say? Nidriya hriyate naktam vyavayena chavavayaha divacharthehaya rajan kutumba bharanenava. He said that people who are wasting their lives, they spend their lives in sleeping and sex indulgence, in the daytime in working hard to maintain their families. This is the apashyatam atma tattvam griheshu grihamedhinam. They don't see the knowledge, they don't have knowledge of the soul, because they're simply involved in mundane family life. We should study all these things. We don't like to hear, but it's necessary for purification. Yeah, anything else?
Thank you very much for revealing the truth.
Revealing the truth means, yeah, we should just speak what's... We're on a very safe path if we speak what is in Prabhupada's books with the same kind of presentation and emphasis that he gave. Then we're on a very safe path. At one time in Los Angeles, I think, about 1974, something like this, devotees, they were just reading about the pastimes of the gopis and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada was not at all pleased. And they said, "We're only reading from your books, Prabhupada." Prabhupada wasn't pleased. He said, "You should know what is the qualification to only speak on these topics." He was not at all pleased. That's the perfection of life, but one has to be qualified for that. Prabhupada himself, certainly he was qualified to speak day and night on the pastimes of Krishna, but he spoke what we needed to hear. Prabhupada's preaching was completely based on Bhagavad Gita, public preaching. Then among the devotees he would go more into the topics of Bhagavata. But public preaching was on the basis of Gita. Yeah.
The question is how to imbibe this one of the foremost truth of Bhagavad Gita, which Lord Krishna teaches, that we are the soul and not this body. Because
how to imbibe the foremost truth of Bhagavad Gita, that we are not the body, we are the soul. Then we have to act on the platform of the soul. If we act on that platform by Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padma, Sevanam, Archanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atma, Nivedanam, then we imbibe that. By living it, we imbibe it. Pratyakshavagamang dharmyam susukam karatam avyayam. We practically, when we act on that platform, then we experience it. That we are the servant of Krishna. So it's very practical. Bhagavad Gita is very practical. It's not just some philosophy. It's not some mental construct that someone dreamed up. It's fact. Therefore, it's practical. Anything else? No? All right, then. We'll finish, huh? Yeah. Okay.
So, my comment that, we don't preach on TV as much as we should. I mean, TV is the popular.
We don't preach on TV as much as we should. We don't preach anywhere as much as we should. Whatever preaching we're doing, it's never enough. One thing about the TV medium is that it's somewhat restricted. I couldn't speak as I wanted to on TV, because they told me if I speak, then they won't, the TV company won't broadcast it. So there were some parameters there.
Because I was thinking, since our philosophy is so good, it's pure.
Yeah.
Why are there so many impediments, I mean, that we can't preach?
So many impediments that we can't preach? Well, this is the world of Maya. It's just like Arjuna, he may have thought that why there are so many impediments. I just want to be a devotee of Krishna. Why are there so many impediments? That's
I understand in India that there's some rules and regulations, but you go to other countries also, like where there are opportunities to preach.
Well, we're in the material world where everyone has come to forget Krishna. So the world is set up like that, to forget Krishna. Distributing Prabhupada's books is the best preaching. They get a whole big chunk of pure understanding from the pure devotee. We should speak also, definitely speaking, but we shouldn't think that preaching, the main thing in preaching is what I speak. The main thing is distributing Prabhupada's books. And then on the basis of that, we should speak. But Prabhupada himself, he didn't think his preaching was just giving lectures. He worked hard to produce books, and he considered the distribution of his books more important than his own speaking. So we should follow that. Of course, here in this country, it's a little difficult.